Hello.
Right.
And welcome to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Emily and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourselves during this meeting. So let's start the meeting of silence with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience or awakening, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except for while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from our AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we will split out into breakout rooms for small group discussion. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at approximately 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I have asked Richard to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thanks, Emily. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Richard, and these are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Okay, so today we'll hear a talk on step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And we are going to give a warm welcome to Ralph W. from Los Angeles, California. Welcome.
Morning, everybody. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic. I'm saying morning because it's 9 in the morning here on the West Coast in Los Angeles. I know for where you guys originate, and I like the Beacon Group. It's noon, but good morning, good afternoon. And I'm gonna get right into it. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And why would I do something like that? You know, my sobriety date is October 11th, 1986. So I got to you guys at 33 years of age. I got to you still living in my mom's house, barely, 33 years old, had a wife and daughter. I didn't know where they were living, and I didn't know where my daughter was enrolled in school. I did not have a driver's license, nor did I have a vehicle to be driving anyway. I had not been to any answered anybody's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake up call to go to work in so long. I did not know if I was employable. In addition, you know, when you face some of the massive, I don't know if I want to say the damage behind me or this mountain in front of me when you're newly sober. And just, it talks about in the book, it says, you know, it talks about these difficulties that pile up and become astonishingly difficult to solve. So you got this big mountain. You start even thinking, I can't even go on a job interview. How am I going to explain that year and a half, 2 year gap, you know, out getting loaded, you know, walking the streets every night? What are you going to do about it? So it's all this mountain of stuff, you know, that's in front of me. So the first step when I got sober and was not an entirely difficult proposition for me, I had been surrendered. I'm not the surrendering type. I had been surrendered, and I had been surrendered well this time. It was my fourth program of recovery. And this time, that October in 1986, I was done. Stick a fork in me. You know, I when I came to you guys, I got a clearer understanding of the nature of this, that there's something physically different about me that'll never change. And something like maybe a little under 10% of the population, we get this thing that we call a phenomenon of craving when we get started. And it's something that cannot be, it's, you know, there we don't have a program for that. You take that first one, you on your own. You know, so in the doctor's opinion, he says all we can suggest is entire abstinence. We don't have, it seems like that's what our program, but that's not what we don't have a program for. Don't pick it up. You don't pick it up. The problem is I always pick it up because I got this other piece that's working, this mental obsession, that no matter what, I keep going back to the well. And for whatever reason, you know, and I have come to believe the surrender that happened to me, I can't speak for anybody else. I used to think it was, I had a lot to do with it, and I did. I continued to get loaded to the bitter end, but really it was a gift that I stayed surrendered. And the longer I've been sober, the more I really appreciate that gift of surrender. And so that happened to me. And the second step, I had been raised in church. I had never really strayed from the idea that there was a power. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I did not believe in the concept that, at least in my mind and in my upbringing, I didn't believe in the concept that most people were pushing. It seemed weak to me. It seemed storytelling seemed like fables and myths, you know, so I was handicapped by a lot. Scoffer, skeptic, cynic. You guys gave me another name, agnostic, and sent me to a chapter. And I was kind of ripe for the second step anyway, because I had come to believe in a power greater than me. We call that power king alcohol. I needed a power greater than it, you know. So this idea of finding a power greater than myself wasn't foreign. I already had a power that was calling the shots for me. I needed a power that could get it. You know, I needed something bigger than the gorilla, because the gorilla was shot calling. And so and here's the other thing. I don't know if we have any people on the platform who have a lot of problems with the God idea. Sometimes people, when people have difficulties with concepts, a lot of times those of us who don't struggle with those particular concepts or ideas, you know, think that it's It's volitional. Think that you're doing that on your, just stop. Why are you wrestling with that idea? Why is the guy that's because I'm handicapped. If it ain't my experience, you're lying about it being yours. And my experience is that you have a valid experience going on. And I know for me, I didn't put thoughts in my head to doubt the existence of this power, to doubt, to not be able to see it like my mama saw it, to not. And so some people who wrestle, but for me, particularly when I take a stand, you know what I'm saying? No, there ain't no power. And I'm going to tell you, for me, what's my vested interest? I had a vested interest in hoping step two was true. There was nothing in it for me that if there ain't no power, because if there ain't no power, I'm in big trouble. I knew I couldn't stop me. I knew you couldn't stop me. I knew my little girl, 2 years old, loved her with everything in me. That didn't stop me. I knew my mama standing in a circle with me and my brothers holding hands and crying. I knew that couldn't stop me. I knew the boss threatening to fire me. That couldn't stop me. So it was no, I couldn't stop me. No human power could stop me. I had a vested interest in believing this proposition you guys presented me with, that maybe, just maybe, there's a power that's bigger than me, that I go back to my childhood, you know, and used to, you know, as a kid, those kind of really fundamental prayers, maybe, just maybe. And there was a vested. So that second step proposition was not that difficult because I'd already done the negative second step. I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I have been living. And so that made that easy for me too. So that propelled me right into this third step, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. For years, I have been saying, you know, made a decision to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions. And that's, I still believe that, but I started thinking about this right when you guys were reading it, made a decision to turn my will. And what is my will? You know, all of us come on this planet and we get gifted with something that distinguishes us as a species. It distinguishes us from everybody else and everything else that roams the planet. You know, we get free will. We get something that none of the other creatures seem to have. We get free will. You know, we get the ability. I was walking to a meeting at about 6 or 8 months sober, and a guy saw me, an old timer, said, "Ralph, what's going on with you?" I said, "Oh, I'm just doing God's work." He said, "Ralph, what do you think you can do for God? God can't do for himself." Floor me, right? What? I thought I gave the right answer, you know? And so I asked John, holler at me, what should I be doing? And he said, "Ralph, God gave you something he didn't even reserve for himself." I said, "Really? I have something God doesn't have? What is that?" He said, "He gave you the choice over whether or not you're going to return his love. God has no choice. God is love." Wow. So God gave me something that is mine. And is, so we usually talk about self-will and God's will. Actually, three. God's will, free will, self-will. And you know, and so this free will deal is a big thing. So turn over my will, which is my thinking, how I see things, my perception of things, not things that are what my thoughts about things, what I want to happen, the make it happen kind of stuff, the control, my will and my life. What is my life? Well, shortcut way is my action, but what is my life? Everybody sitting there right now, what's my life? It's what's going on right now. It's what I'm in right now. It's the business. So I'm going to turn over my thoughts about what should be happening, what is happening, and how life is coming at me. And I'm also going to turn over, you know, exactly the event, what's going on right now. God, you can have all of that. You can have what's going on with me. And my thoughts about what's going on with me, and my thoughts about what should be going on with me, and my thoughts about what should not have gone on. You take all that. Wow. So that's the framework. Why? You know, so we look and it talks about being convinced. So looking back at my life and the evidence of my life and the experiences of my life, you know, when I look back, I come to, you know, a couple of conclusions, you know, that my life run on my will, hardly be a success. Our book talks about any life run on self-will can hardly be a success, you know. But I look at my, I gave you guys a really quick profile of Ralph White at 33 on October 11th, 1986. Nowhere to live. No, didn't know anywhere about where my family was living. Hadn't been to work in a couple of years. Hadn't looked at myself full face in the mirror in a year. Didn't have a driver's license. Didn't have a bank account. You know, life in tatters. The outward evidence that my life run on my will couldn't be a success. Not to mention the N-word. You know, devastated. You know, a guy who had dreams, goals, hopes, and, you know, ambitions, devastated. You know, no longer thought that they even still celebrated Christmas and birthdays. No longer was the guy that thought I'd be welcome in anybody's life anymore. You know, and see, there's a part in our book that talks about having lost the reliance on things human. You know, their self-confidence. I had been a pretty confident, gone. You know, most of you guys that sit on here will send me to page 52 and talk about the description of all the things that take place in there, unable to control. So all that stuff, the you know, so but you know, a real quick glance of where I had been at 33 under my best efforts. You know, being convinced my life run. So any life run on self-will, my life run on my will can hardly be a success. Check it, you know. And so now this business of turning my life, when I look at it like that, why wouldn't I want to be under new management? Look at what my man sold. The deal. So for anybody standing on the precipice, standing on the threshold of the third step, wondering whether or not I want to make this decision. I want to sign on the dotted line. I want to enter this contract. I want to get in this relationship. I want to come up out of what it was I was doing. I want to voluntarily give over my free will and align it with God's will. Because apparently God's will and Ralph's will cannot simultaneously coexist. I like to think I used to think I'm going to align self-will with God's will. Because I'm an extreme example of self-will when right, and because self-will, just think about it. Self-will is all about Ralph. I only see it from the lens of me. I only see how life is coming at me. I only see my self-interest. I only see how it's going to benefit me. I only see how, even at my best, even when somebody might have cancer that's close to me and I'm praying for them and I'm doing it, it's because I don't want to feel the sadness, the hurt, whatever it is that's going to happen if I suffer a loss. Sometimes people say, how did they die on me? How did they leave me? So everything, even at my best, I'm in collision, because self-will, by definition, you got self-will, I got self-will. Self-will is always going to be colliding with a bunch of other self, you know, by definition, you know, and it's constricting. I don't have a big view. I don't see the whole picture. I don't see the whole playing field. It's like my kids, you know, and you're a parent and you got kids that are infants, you know, and you run in a household, right? You the daddy or you the mom, and you see mortgage, you see you see utilities, you see you got four kids, you see this one over here is going to need a football uniform, this one over here is going to need her dance recital stuff, this one over here is going to need college tuition, this one over here is going to need some special education, this one, so I'm juggling, I got the big view in my household, right, and each one of the kids is seeing, I need to get to football, right? I need to do this, and so the only person with the big view, the only entity with the big view is gotta be. So I need the entity with the big view who's dealing with a whole bunch of kids, right? A whole bunch of kids in this planet. And so when we just, so self-will and God's will never. So I'm going to align my free will with God. And that's why. Why is that such a big deal? Let's stay with this analogy I'm using, because it's flawed, you guys, because me as a dad is very different than God in the driver's seat. Me as a dad, I'm as selfless as I can be. I'm as selfless as I can be. I'm as fair as I can be. I'm as forgiving as I can be. So, but it still is minuscule compared, but just so we can have a conversation. Let's keep that analogy going. Let's look at the parent in this deal. You know, you got more than one kid and they're willful. They're willful. They want to do what they want to do. And you love them. You know them. You've seen them since infancy. You got two or three of them, three or four of them. Each one has their own personalities. You know, now, this is what makes me a good parent. For me to impose my will, you know, my daughter's Rain is a lawyer. River is an artist. And now she's a tech business person, you know. And as a good dad, would I have been a great dad? Because I was so proud of River going to law school, and River's 12 years older than, I mean, Rain going to law school and the rest. Rain's 12 years older than River. And so when River comes along and wants to be this actor and the rest, would I have been a great dad? No, hell no. Get out, and you ain't gonna make no money doing that. You know, I don't know where that's gonna take you. That's a flighty profession. You know, it's a lot of potholes there. Look at this whole, you know, what happens to girls and how, you know, this whole, no, I want you to go to law school like your sister. Or would I be, as a dad, would the attribute be, I want to support whatever it is that you want to be. When I get scared in that third step, my friend, the late Leon Strange used to say in the third step, what if when I turn my will and my life over to the care of this power, what if he wants to put me in a white polyester suit and have me preaching on street corners? Then Strange will follow that up, of course, with, well, based on the way I looked when I came in, that would have been an improvement. But anyway, what makes me think that this power is going to want for me something that is not good for me? So now, you guys, when I do the third step, even when I'm looking at my objections, right? When I'm looking at my fears and they're very good. When remember in We Agnostics, when it talks about how it is that I'm going to start creating this concept of this power for myself, it says, ask yourself, what do spiritual terms mean to you? So in the third step, when I say, well, you know, I wonder what God would do with me, ask myself, what does that mean? So that frames my concept of this power. Do I think the power is a puppet master? Do I think the power is this, you know, is the guy in the Jekyll and Hyde? I think that the Dr. Jekyll that makes him, do I think God is that? You know, the marionette guy. Do I think he's that? No. I think he's benevolent. I think he's got my best interest at heart. I think he knows better for me than I do for me. And I don't think he's going to make me Jeffrey. I don't think he's going to make me, he's going to make Ralph the best Ralph can be. You know, and so, wow. So it starts framing and expanding my concept of the power, just engaging in this third step process. And so this business of, you know, being convinced in my life run on my will can hardly be a success. You know, so how do I get out of that anyway? How do I spring that trap? Because I'm stuck in it. I'm an extreme example of self-will. Not just because it's saying in the literature, because it's true in my life. I'm extreme in everything that it is that goes on with me. So that's not odd. You know, many people are wrapped up in self-will. In fact, I believe most people walking the planet to a large extent are exerting self-will. We grow up in a society that promotes and competitive. If you play ball, you know, there's a lot of self-will. So I'm an extreme example of that. Hell no, I'm not, though he usually doesn't think so. So the minute you sit up here and rebel again, right there, Bill, what kind of trap was that you laid for me, right? But this business, so how do I spring that trap? How do I really get out of that? Well, you know, right there it says, so this is how you do it, Ralph. This is the how and the why. We have to quit playing God. Oh, that's how I get out of this. From being committed, my life run on my will can hardly be. It's how do you stop doing, quit playing God? Why would I do that? And how do I do it? Because it don't work. It don't work. Not because, now, no disrespect to any of our religious people on here. And I know that biblical stuff says you should have no God before, don't take his name in vain. But not for any of those reasons for a guy like me. The big reason is it don't work. Well, what does playing God look like anyway? I play God when I want anything or anybody to be other than what it is. That's a real short version for me, you know. And so but this third step proposition, you guys, is wonderful. I don't know in the third step for me whether I'm walking toward the power or whether I'm running away from the gorilla. It really don't matter. I'm going in the right direction. Whether you're running from or whether you're walking to, you're going in the right direction. Don't worry about that. You know, and it's a wonderful thing. You know, the two entities I think that are the most blessed entities on this planet, you know, are the most pampered, I guess. Newborn babies, you know, infants who come into a good family or are well-loved dogs. You dog lovers, those two entities, you know, they are under management. They under extreme management of whoever it is that are their parents. You dog lovers call yourselves parents, and you got a newborn. They don't have to do anything. They can pee all over. You know, they can sit and nobody gets mad. They can make mess. Nobody gets mad. They don't have to go look for food. You feed them. You look for times to feed them. They don't even have to tell. You know, the minute they cry, you see to them, anybody. And I look at the third step as falling into that blanket. You know, why wouldn't I want to be under new management? When you get old and you've been in doing life for a long time and you've been bumping into other people and you've been making mistakes and you've been paying for the mistakes and then you've been paying for the cleaning up the mistakes. Isn't it wonderful to take your hand off the wheel? I don't like driving. I'm 69 years old, you guys. I do a lot of driving in LA. I have to go to Lancaster the other day and one of my boys, you know, he said, Ralph, I'll roll. And it's nothing like being in the passenger seat. You know, it's nothing, particularly when you got a driver that's a whole lot better than you. Particularly when you got a driver that know where he's going. Particularly when you have a driver that don't have accidents. Particularly, you know, when you got a driver that's going to take you places and on adventures you wouldn't have thought of going on your own. Oh my God, the third step, walking into the promise of the third step. You know, sometimes I look at it like it's constraining. You know, this in the third step prayer, which we didn't talk about, and it's the predicate, it's the foundation for the rest of our program. Relieve me of the bondage of self. You know, what's holding me back in life, in a real way, you guys, everything in my life, it's too much me. It's too much me between me and the power. It's too much me between me and you. Relieve me of the bondage of self, you know, and what holds me in bondage is me. Self is the prison, and self is the prison tech, is the one that's putting me there. You know, it robs me of so much. I think when I think about the third step prayer, it is a very interesting take. When you're a kid in school and you see this girl that you like and you're looking at Adrian and you're looking and you might send them a note, will you go with me? Will you be my girlfriend? They can check a box or say yes or no. Later in life, you might get on one knee and you might say, baby, will you take me for your husband? But the third step prayer, this primary relationship that I'm going to enter that'll be life-changing, transformational, that I walk down the rest of my life hand in hand with. It's interesting, you know, that I don't say, okay, God, you know, will you be my, no. Take me. It's going to be repeated at the seventh step too. You know, I offer myself to you just like this. And in the third step, I don't have to come right to get right in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to already have given up. You know, when you join church, are you renouncing sin? And are you gonna come get down with this group and promise to do everything? That's not what we do in the third step. While you're still doing whatever it is that you are made, find objectionable, society may find, while whatever it is that still seemingly blocks me from the power. Still home and get on your knees. Still tricking, get on your knees. Still lying, get on your knees. Still stealing and embezzling, get on your knees. Still doing all that, get on your knees. And I have not yet discovered anybody who's gotten on their knees and made that offer. I've not yet found anybody who said, God threw me back. God turned me down. You know, so, you know, my proposal here is, why wouldn't you want to get in the car? Why wouldn't you want to take the great adventure? Why wouldn't you want to go somewhere you've probably never been before? It's a hell of a ride. It's bumpy sometimes, but you got the best driver, you know, and I got 100% survival rate trusting in this power I found in the third step. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.